Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Oh, here I am. Let's go. Let's do a radio. Hey, Milwaukee, what's up? I got a message for you in a few minutes. Good morning. Welcome into the program. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for being here. It's not an existential crisis, I don't think. I don't actually know what that means. It sounds cool, though, doesn't it? But I have a philosophical question I want to apply to the real world that I think might get me in trouble, but I really want to do it. So we're going to talk about it, you and me together. Me, you, Milwaukee, beyond Milwaukee, everybody, in about 20 minutes. I am fired up. Let's go. Let's go. Bill Ryder, that's me, sports writer on Twitter, sports R-E-I-T-E-R, where all the happy thoughts live, that land of rainbows and puppy dogs and man hugs. You guys are great. Tommy's on there, too. Pretty daddy, CBS. Tom DeCelestino, the executive producer. Just once, I want to meet four tough guys, as tough in the real life as on the internets. Just one time. Just one time. There are some more warning signs about Shohei Ohtani. We're going to hit it. I'm going to update you a little bit every day if there's news to be had. We can't draw, I certainly cannot draw, any real stark, definitive conclusions. But it is such a significant question of what actually happened, who bet that money, whether or not his now-fire translator, Ipe, told the truth the first time or the second time or no times at all in that conversation with ESPN that really in large part led to this conundrum. And we've got an update, and I'm going to hit you with it, and you're going to want to hear it in about 20 minutes. I've got that philosophical dilemma that I want to bring to the real world. We've got a Dak Prescott story. Happened shortly after the show ended yesterday, so I know you've heard a lot about it over the last 22, 21 hours. But I've got a take on it that I think is interesting. We'll do that this hour. My buddy, my co-host, one of my three co-hosts, including me, tri-host, John Gonzalez is going to be on the show in an hour. Not the co-host of this show, obviously, of Beyond the Arc, NBA podcast, CBS Sports, blah, blah, blah. Go get it. Listen to it. Like it. Download it. Tom listens to it, I think. Buy or sell is coming up later, and I like looking at some of the early odds out of Vegas. Now, Nick Costos, our buddy over at our gambling side of things here at Odyssey, our gambling insider and expert, has told us money that gets bet doesn't really move lines. That's kind of a misnomer a little bit, but the first odds that come out are often indicative of what Vegas kind of thinks, where they start with their thinking on what things are going to be. And the Coach of the Year odds in the NFL next year, which just dropped, are really, really interesting. If you would like to call us and hang out and be friends, or whatever, 855-212-4CBS. And again, Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. I am right, and you, Milwaukee, are wrong. That's where we're going to start with the story. We're on the air in Milwaukee. And by the way, I love Milwaukee. I'm from Dubuque, Iowa. I got family in Wisconsin. Wisconsin ain't Iowa, but it's similar, right? That part of the same part of the world. I like the people in the front office in Milwaukee. I know most of the people in most of the front offices around the country. Just because I like you or you're good at your job doesn't mean things are going to go well. NBA's a cutthroat business, but I happen to like the Milwaukee Bucks organization. But man, they screwed up when they hired Doc Rivers. And I've been trying to tell you that again and again and again and again. And yesterday, I wrote, I think it dropped yesterday, maybe the day before, I had a column come out that looked at Doc Rivers' first 25 games in charge of the Bucks. And I really thought it was going to be, actually thought it was for me, fairly positive. It was certainly fair. Doc's first 15 games before last night had gone pretty well, pretty good record. Maybe things are trending in the right direction. The record overall still hasn't been amazing, but I guess if you parse it a certain way, okay, things look fine. But the story gave you some actual context and pointed out that if you measure Doc Rivers' tenure with the Bucks in the same ways, you can kind of cut it up in different phases, right? First 25 games, or overall, which is his first 25 games, or maybe you want to give him a 10-game cushion and go after the All-Star game. If you compare the exact same timelines for Adrian Griffin, the guy that got fired when the Bucks were 30-13, Doc doesn't compare particularly well. And a lot of you got really angry, very mad at me. Hey, sports writer! This is from Gregory Smith. And by the way, Gregory, parents went for it, and I respect the hell out of it. Right? Not Craig, Gregory. I like it. Gregory Smith. Hey, sports writer, turn on TNT. And I did. Well, I already had it on. And you're right. The Bucks, congratulations, were beating the hell out of a LeBron-less Lakers, because that's a big challenge. But whatever, you play the teams that are in front of you, and the Bucks were crushing them and up a bunch of points, and that was great. And a lot of you started to sort of, you know, lay it on a little bit. Becky Hammond, not really Becky Hammond, but like a fan account. Hey, sports writer, you feel like watching the Bucks for the first time in your bleeping life tonight? Or does this game not count because the oldest player in the NBA isn't playing? And a depressed Bucks fan whose depression was going to sink in. I'll get to that here in a second. This feels like such a weird time. This article just smoked the thunder. Okay. I don't usually care about what people say on X because, with all due respect, I'm sure you're very nice in your real lives and very smart in your real lives. People on social media are stupid and they're basest version of themselves often. But all of this hate came from the fact that Doc Rivers' Bucks, coming off a nice win against the Thunder, really nice win, were beating the holy bleep, as I think somebody said, out of a Los Angeles Lakers team that did not have LeBron James. And they got 18 points, and the game was basically over. I actually switched it away because the game was over to go watch the Warriors game. And then Doc Rivers' teams did what Doc Rivers' teams do. They somehow managed to blow a nearly, 19-point lead, a nearly 20-point lead. The game wasn't over, but it was pretty close to over, and the Lakers came storming back. So to answer the question of the people who asked, yes, I watched the game, and yes, I'm well aware of Doc Rivers and his issues. And that blown game by Milwaukee, to me, showcases not that Doc Rivers sucks at his job. It's a lot more complicated than that. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying that he has been shockingly, historically unreliable in the playoffs. And the thing is, if you are Alex Rodriguez, okay, let me give you an example, and you are one of the great hitters we've seen, but you just can't do it in the playoffs, you're not going to be measured as if you're Doug DeCenzo. You're going to be measured as if you're A-Rod. That's the way it's going to work. If you are the 1990s Buffalo Bills, and you make four, think about this, in today's era, four consecutive Super Bowls, okay, and you can't win one, you're not going to be measured as if you're the Chicago Bears of basically any era in the history of the sport. You're going to be measured as if you're a team that should get over that final goal line. And if you are Doc Rivers and you are continuously gifted or able to lead, and it's both the opportunity to coach championship-level teams and multiple organizations in the NBA, and you fail again and again and again and again over the last 15 years since Boston to get where you got to go, to even make a finals, that's going to be an issue. Doc Rivers is 6-10 in Game 7s in the playoffs. That is not good. He is 17-33 in playoff closeout games, which is a stunner. I've thrown these stats at you many times. That is something that you need to talk about. And when Doc Rivers' teams have led 3-1 in their series, it's only happened 13 times. Three times he has been the guy to give that away. That's almost one quarter of every 3-1 series lead ever blown. And what does that do with last night? There's an unreliability to Doc Rivers, even when on the surface things are shiny and bright and beautiful. And Milwaukee, I'm not mad at you. And even the people that wrote at me was all angry. And I don't think they said this, but get glasses. I have glasses. Watch the games. I do watch the games. It's actually like a job requirement. I don't hate your team. I actually feel bad for you. I'm not rooting against you. I'm just aware of what's going to happen. And John Gonzalez, my buddy, who sees the NBA completely differently than I do. He looks at the standings. I don't. He thinks that, you know, some of these things that aren't in the analytics don't matter. I do. It's fine. And I'm going to be wrong sometimes. I'm not wrong on Doc Rivers. Last night is about Doc Rivers. It is a symptom of the Doc Rivers dilemma that his teams underperform all the time. Now, does it matter in the long run if the Milwaukee Bucks lose a game in March? Not technically. It matters for the Lakers. All of a sudden, they got a chance to jump up to that 8 spot. And it's a huge boost with LeBron out. But it tells you something about Milwaukee. And you can look at the stats, and I can give you all of them, but just go read the article that everybody hates. It's got all this information in there. There's something just that isn't right on that team. Doc, yes, has improved that team defensively. There's no doubt. He has brought them to a lesser point on offense. But the real issue is, and the issue where I think you're going to see in playoff time problems, significantly serious problems, the real issue is the fact that they're two superstars, Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I should say it in the other order because it's Giannis 1A and Lillard 1B, do not look and are not playing in a way that is in rhythm together. And I don't care in the games they've won. They won a game against the Nets last week where in Brooklyn's they're a pretty bad basketball team. But you win the games you win. I'm not mad about wins that the Milwaukee Bucks get. You get the W and good for you. But there was a fourth quarter where the Bucks made it close, and I thought somehow Milwaukee was going to lose that game too. And Bucks fans, if you watched it, right, if you watched it like I did, you'll know what I'm talking about. And it's okay, by the way, to have any NBA team be close. It's about winning the games, and the Bucks did win. But Giannis and Dame just didn't look right together. And I know, Adrian Griffin, not the greatest coach on the face of the earth, not saying he should have been the guy. Really, the mistake was made by John Horst, who's the GM in Milwaukee, and I think good at his job, when he didn't hire, insert Nick Nurse, insert Monty Williams got paid too much, insert anybody other than Adrian Griffin or Doc Rivers. I mean, you go from bad to worse, I think you have in Rivers, or maybe you go from bad to a little less bad. It's not going to be enough to win an NBA championship. And in that game against the Nets, you saw Lillard and Giannis literally a couple times at the end of the game because it was close in crunch time for a minute before Dame took over weirdly with his defense. He had two big steals a week and a half ago against Brooklyn. You saw Dame and Giannis kind of look at each other and not know what to do. Who defers to who, they're trying to show respect, but they're not in rhythm. It reminded me of the early days of me covering LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, who, by the way, were great friends and wanted to play together. Not that Giannis and Dame don't, but they got kind of thrown together by a front office. LeBron and Wade chose to play together as, you know, really good friends, and it didn't work. It didn't work for 50 games with those guys. Some would argue it didn't work until the second season, just in terms of being in rhythm and knowing each other's habits and when to defer and when not to defer. And when you're a star and you defer to another guy, sometimes you're deferring too much. So, yeah, do they run more pick and rolls together? Sure, they do, but not very effectively. In fact, you saw an overtime yesterday. It was two overtimes. So really both. You saw Dame and Giannis take turns, and I might have missed one. I did watch it, Bucks fans. There was one pick and roll that I can recall where toward the end of the game, Lillard got the ball to Giannis, and Giannis crashed the glass. And if I remember right, he got fouled and went to the free throw line. But they should have been doing that the entire time. In fact, it really was largely the Damian Lillard show in overtime and double overtime, which I'm okay if Dame time is coming off him being hot. That dude finished the game 9 of 29. He was brutal. He looked like Russell Westbrook back when we thought maybe that guy should be the leader of a team before he got to the point where he's what he is now. They didn't go to, for me, Giannis is the best player on earth, other than Jokic, maybe better, even though in the moment we don't say that. But over the last 2 years and the next 2 years, give me Giannis, give me Embiid, give me Jokic, whatever. Throw their names into a bag, pulling out, you're good. Either of those guys, any of those three guys, can be the best player on earth. Something's wrong. And do you know whose issue that is? It's Doc Rivers' issue. It's Doc Rivers' problem. And in the fourth quarter, when things really started to slip away, and when that rousing comeback happened, it was pretty telling. It was pretty interesting. I'm looking at it now. I just want to give the exact stats. With 8:25 left in the fourth quarter, the Bucks were up 19 on a Lakers team that did not have LeBron James. And by the way, I saw Anthony Davis play the most minutes in his entire career. Credit to that guy. And you would think Doc Rivers after the game would come out and say, you know, we were up 19 with 8 minutes left, and we really things to. You want Milwaukee fans? You ask me if I watch Bucks games. Why don't we ask Doc Rivers if he watches the games he coaches? Because he got the quarter wrong where things started to turn the wrong direction.
Honestly, I thought it started in the beginning of the third. You know, I just never thought we reached the intensity level that we had for the first half. I think they got, what, 4 loose balls, 4 offensive rebounds in the first 3 minutes of the third quarter. You know, when you have a team down, I think it was 18, right? You have a chance to take that to 30. And we didn't do that. We took it from 18 to 10, coming right out of the door. That gave them hope, you know. And then after that, I just thought we, first game in a while, it will be a good lesson for us. We didn't trust the pass tonight. You know, a lot of zero pass shots or one pass shots. And when we play like that, you know, we get away with it some nights because guys make shots. But we lost our trust. And that's something we haven't done. Not that concerned by it. We won't do that very often. But it will scream off the tape. And it'll be good for us to see.
Second part first, first part second. Yeah. The team didn't pass, and they didn't incorporate their really 3 stars. I think Middleton's amazing. And maybe that's because the coach is in charge of facilitating that. And if you look at Doc Rivers' teams over the years, and I have, and you watch the games, and I have, and you look at the numbers in any way, slice them however you want, this season, Adrian Griffin versus Doc Rivers, the offense is markedly worse now than it was under Adrian Griffin. The defense is markedly improved. If you want to really get into it, net rating, which is your point differential, better, you know, plus or minus per 100 possessions, fancy schmancy talk, was better under Adrian Griffin in every way you want to slice and dice it. They were a better team. Not as balanced, but a better team. And Doc Rivers saying that they really lost their energy at the end of the third quarter, again, I think underlines maybe, and I'm just suggesting this, Bucks fans, because we're from the same part of the country and I like you, and even though you're mad at me, I just want to be here for you. Maybe it's your coach who doesn't watch the games and you should talk to him about it, because actually, at the end of the third quarter, the Bucks took their lead from 8 to 15, and then it dropped to 14 in the final 9 seconds. They literally doubled their lead heading into the fourth quarter. It wasn't the end of the third quarter. It was the mid part of the fourth quarter when the Lakers really turned it on, and it was when the Bucks decided to really implement the Doc Rivers style of offensive execution and not score for the last 3 minutes and change at the end of the game. Then you go to overtime, and then you go to double overtime. Look, I'm actually, am I rooting against Doc Rivers? I like being right. I'm not going to lie. Everybody likes being right. I like being right. I enjoyed watching your team, Milwaukee, lose the game last night. But I also kind of felt bad because I got family who are Bucks fans, and I like the organization, and that's a real thing. But it doesn't really matter what I want to happen or what not to happen. You saw the reality, and this is where it's going. The Bucks aren't doing anything in the playoffs. Doc Rivers isn't going to get it done. He's not up to the task. And it gets more difficult, not less, in the playoffs, because it does become a film-based, pre-planned process rather than, as a GM, former GM, recent GM, told me, a flow offense where it's really sort of spontaneous in the regular season because you still have a lot of time to practice or prep and you don't have a lot of back-to-backs anymore, but you just have games going here and there and guys need time off for rest. Okay, Doc Rivers ain't it. Go read the story again, Bucks fans with fresh eyes. The reason I wrote the story when I wrote it is because it was 25 games, and the reality is Doc Rivers is going to squander probably the third most interesting basketball team in the NBA. The Nuggets are better. The Celtics are better. After that, with the right coach, the Milwaukee Bucks should be in that exact same class. They have the wrong coach, and we saw it last night. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. You can call in. You can yell at me. It's fine. I'm mad at you. But just do it on Twitter. SportsRider, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. I haven't said good morning to Pretty Daddy. We'll do that. Just you never know what happened in his world. Maybe a troop of Girl Scouts and their Girl Scout leader asked him for directions, and he said no. I don't know. We're going to see what's going on. I have a philosophical question I want to bring to the real world and an update on Ohtani. It's small, but I think significant, and you don't want to miss it. It's next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Well, the point is when people say, oh, that's low-hanging fruit. Yeah. Yeah, I know. If you've got a can of tomatoes in your cupboard right in front of you, but then you have 12 cans of tomatoes that are up above the fridge, you have to get a ladder, you're going to say, oh, low-hanging can of tomatoes. I'm going to get the... No, man. Low-hanging fruit is great. All of you who criticize low-hanging fruit, shut up.
On CBS Sports Radio.
Wow, I got aggressive. I said shut up. Okay. Good point, though. Let's be honest. That was a great point. Glad I made it. Low-hanging, you know, tomato can, probably poorly phrased, low-placed, low-awaiting. That's better, maybe. Sitting lowly upon thy cupboard, maybe. I don't know, but because it's not hanging. That's fruit. Honestly, the earth is an amazing place. I mean, think about, I mean, just a tree. And then there's just things you can eat hanging from it. People make fun of the idea of a money tree. Okay, you're not going to find money on a tree. But you can find fruit. You picking up what I'm putting down, D-Cell?
Not even a little bit.
All right. Okay. Man, I love my job. So here's the thing about me. I'm never going to say stuff I don't think is true, ever, about anything. I had a boss the other day. I don't know that it was a compliment. We were talking about something from back in sort of my career. It was pretty serious. And he goes, I really respect, this is my boss the other day, I really respect, Bill, that you always say what you think, even if it's not to your benefit. And I was about to say thank you, and he goes, like admitting you farted on Brooklyn Decker. He's like, bleep. I think it was bleep word. Thank you, question mark. I'm not going to lie to you on this show. I might be wrong. I'm sure I'll get stuff wrong. That's 100% going to happen. And even though I'm going to tell you how often I'm right, like every other radio host, I'm not going to pretend like most of it. I didn't say it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm 100% here for it. But I'm not going to pretend. Okay, I'm going to see the world probably a little bit differently than other people do. I get really annoyed, and it's a professional thing. Although it should annoy you too. I get really annoyed with so many smart colleagues who are more focused on what their colleagues think than what you think. And that's mostly true, I think, in NBA writing circles, but it's true everywhere. It's just a real thing. Take this Shohei Ohtani deal. Now, I don't have insight beyond what you know. His former translator, Ipe, allegedly ran up $4.5 million in debt, and in first telling Ipe, the former translator, and good friend of Shohei Ohtani until recently, claims that he went to Shohei last year, confessed his mistake and his gambling issue, and Shohei said, I got you, you're my friend, I'm going to help you. That was the story for a few hours to ESPN. And we now know that the story changed. Remember, that conversation between a reporter at ESPN, reporters, and this former translator was set up, as we understand it, by Shohei Ohtani's people. People entrusted with Shohei's brand, with guarding him, his PR people, his lawyers. And then the tune changed. Ipe came back out and said, I'm just kidding. He didn't know. So there are questions about whether this is Ohtani who gambled or whether it's his translator. I don't know. We don't know. These allegations are murky and they're confusing. They're hard to get to the bottom of. But there is this, I think, perspective out there where the people who are really, I hate the term hot takers, are trying to push this, Shohei did it! And the people who I think I would argue cover baseball and maybe are conditioned to look around and see what their colleagues are saying, are trying to be overly cautious. I mean, we don't have any reason to think it's Shohei. Here's the reality. We don't know anything. We know there's a massive gambling scandal. We know that we've been told that baseball wasn't bet on, but we've been told this by a person who's already shown himself in Ipe to be a liar. And we know that people that have gambling problems will lie extensively about their habits and about how they get the money or why they need the money or what's going on. And so I'm just going to reserve judgment, but I think it is worth careful consideration and study by Major League Baseball. And there's a cloud that's over Ohtani, and maybe unfairly, and maybe fairly, and maybe we'll never know. We'll be for a long time. Here's the latest in all that context of, man, who did what? Shohei Ohtani and his attorneys, really his attorneys, released a statement at the back end of that crazy day where the story came to light, saying Shohei has been the victim of a major fraud. Now, let me just pause it there. In the context of what we know, because they did not name the translator, the implication is clear. They are claiming, and Shohei really doubled down on this, said this yesterday in his through a translator. They are saying, Shohei Ohtani is saying, my good friend took advantage of me. He stole from me. I did not know. The allegation from Shohei Ohtani toward his former translator and good buddy is that this guy somehow got access to his bank account, which I find the least probable, but it's possible outcome, and stole $4.5 million without Ohtani knowing, which is possible. I know it wouldn't be possible to you and to me, but again, we don't make that kind of money. Think of $45 went missing from your bank account. You might not notice, right? You just, especially if you have a lot of money, not Shohei money, but a lot, maybe you have 5 or 6 or 7 accounts, right? $48 goes missing from your savings account you don't look at very often. Okay, here is the issue. For me, it's not, could this guy have access to his bank account? Yeah, he could. That happens with athletes. This is not even, could Shohei Ohtani really not notice $4.5 million missing over many, many months? Yeah, I think that's a plausible outcome, actually. And I guess you can really stretch your imagination if you want to and make an argument, okay, I guess an illegal alleged bookie would extend $4.5 million in credit to a translator, assuming, big assumption, if something went wrong, Shohei, when he found out, would pay the money. And you can also even convince yourself, well, the money came from Shohei Ohtani's account, so if the translator actually broke in and faked himself being Shohei, maybe he fooled the alleged bookie, too, that Shohei had backed him. All right, maybe. Here's where things get tricky for me, and where I don't have good answers. If, in fact, Shohei Ohtani had his money stolen from him by this person, that is a crime. That is theft of $4.5 million. And in order to protect Shohei Ohtani, any other things that could have happened, his reputation, to protect him from what in this situation would be unfair but reasonable speculation, but ultimately not accurate speculation about what Shohei Ohtani may have done, you have to press charges. You have to turn this over to the authorities. In fact, Shohei Ohtani's people, in their statement, said it had been turned over to the proper authorities, but they will not answer now when ESPN or others say, hey, who'd you turn it over to? Did this go to people in Japan? Is this a Los Angeles County or Orange County, which is the county south of here, prosecutor and authorities? Did you go federal? Since there's a federal investigation into the alleged bookmaker, did you go to them? They won't answer. They won't even reply. There's not even a, well, we've done it, but the authorities have asked. We don't even know. And that is disconcerting because, and again, I don't know. I hope Shohei Ohtani is the most innocent guy on the face of the earth. But if there were a scenario where these allegations turned out to be a little more complicated, if, as other people have speculated, Shohei Ohtani, in fact, did gamble this money, and that is not alleged, but is certainly something that people have raised as a worry, then you might be hesitant to falsely, in this situation, accuse somebody else of doing it because an investigation might result in the outcome being what you don't want to have happen. And so if Shohei Ohtani and his folks do not press charges, if there's not a formal investigation of his former translator, if we don't get answers through a legal process that will be public, that is going to raise some serious red flags. I said the other day, because it's in the heat of the battle, right? It's in the heat of breaking news. We may never know. The reality is, if Ohtani is telling the truth, and I hope he is, and I want to think that he is, and I want to believe him, and these situations are terrible, and I got nothing but respect. If you really love this guy like a brother and you wanted to help him and he took advantage of you, or if you trusted him and he stole from you, that's awful. But we should get answers if Ohtani's telling the truth, which is what I want, because this person should go to jail or be prosecuted or have some, if the allegations are true. If anyone stole $4.5 million from anybody, there are legal recourses for that. There are criminal recourses for that. To say nothing of trying to get the money back civilly. And any process in a court of law, civil or otherwise, that is public. Very quickly, before I forget, I had a weird thought yesterday. Can I share it with you?
I'm skeptical here, but go for it.
This Ohtani trial thing, right? And I was like, man, can you imagine testifying? And yesterday, and I hope everyone's okay, I don't know if they are, my daughter was coming home from school, and there was a car that had flipped over. It was like a serious accident, and all these witnesses. And I don't know why, I was just thinking about, if I were a witness in something, like let's say, I'm just going to make this up, a nun sued Pretty Daddy for, you know, for whatever, for not giving directions. She got lost and she felt like you weren't a good Samaritan, right? You're getting sued. And I got called as a character witness, okay? So this is, I just want you to picture me. Or if you want it to be more serious, a real trial of some kind where I'm a witness, right? I see a bank heist. That'd be cool. But from a distance, like a tornado. And I, like, I see one of the guys, and they call me. Here, I want to know, seriously, if I would go to jail if this happened, if I would be found in contempt of court. I have this sort of, this dream. You ready, Tom? That I'm in court, and I'm a witness, but I'm not really, like, involved. I'm just a witness. Did you see the defendant running down the street at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday? I have always wanted to just get in front of a jury and have them be like, can you say your name for the jury or anything? And just say, you can't handle the truth. This is a Few Good Men reference. Just like rattle off the lines. We live in a world with walls. Who's going to guard them? You, Lieutenant Weinberg. If I did that, if I actually did that in an actual court of law, do you think I'd get a laugh? Do you think people would just pretend it didn't happen? Or do you think the judge, I think that I'd get admonished, but maybe not contempt of court, you're in jail for the night? Or do you think I'd get in jail for the night?
I don't think you would get a single laugh, and there's a real possibility higher than 50% you are behind bars for the night.
You think I'm going to jail?
Yeah.
Can you play? Do you have the inspiration for this idea?
You can't handle the truth!
You probably haven't seen the paper because it's from 1992 and has Michael Keaton and no one's seen it. But as a newspaper reporter, a former one, I always dreamt of screaming, stop the presses. And there's a scene in that where they have to stop the presses. And he just tells the guy, stop the presses. And his buddy goes, I think Randy Quaid goes, you got to say it, right? And he's like, oh, he goes, you got, and he goes, stop the presses. My version, because I'm never going to get to do that. It's of stop the presses. There are no presses. What do you say now? Delete the internet story. My idea of stop the presses now is you can't handle the truth in an actual court setting. Problem is, I'm never going to be in court. Hopefully, knock on wood. I don't think so, right? So I don't have that on my to-do list. You look incredulous. You don't feel like you share the same passion.
No, I would be terrified to say that in a court of law.
I've been in a court of law covering cases. I've never been on a jury. Have you been on a jury?
Never. Probably for the best.
I don't want to be. You'd be a great jury person.
Really?
Yeah, you have no human emotion. So you'd just be like, so, you know? Are you worried, juror number 31, about liking the defendant? Oh, I don't like anybody. Oh, you're on. He's a foreman. You can't handle the truth. Is that the greatest movie line in movie history? Potentially. It's on the list.
It's on the list.
You have me at hello? Who gives a bleep it's gone?
There's some really good ones.
Can you name that movie? Who gives a bleep it's The Trajectory?
No, I don't know it.
Major League.
I've seen that movie quite a few times.
It's a great, 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 great film. Let's talk about Dak Prescott and his future. And whether or not the Cowboys can handle that truth. After we get a CBS Sports Radio update from Andrew Bogish.
You can't handle the truth!
Welcome back to Writer Than You.
One of the first radio hits I ever did as a host, where I was the host, I had a football player on. I don't remember his name. But let's say his name is Bill Ryder, just because I'll be able to tell the story. And I go, oh, welcome to the show, blah, blah. How you doing today, Bill Reader? And he goes, I was doing well till you mispronounced my name. That was the start of my radio career.
Ouch.
Oh, God. That's why they start you in the evenings on a Saturday.
On CBS Sports Radio.
Well, not everywhere, but they used to. Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. What's wrong, pal?
I'm great. I'm good.
How long did it take you to get used to working with me?
It's been almost 3 years, and I'm not there yet.
You're not there yet?
Not quite.
Will you tell the people I did try to warn you in a job interview?
Yes, to be fair, yes, you did.
You didn't believe me?
No, not to this extent.
No.
No.
Let me ask you this question. People that like the show don't like the show. What percentage, zero being not at all, 100 being completely, am I the same person off the air as on the air?
101%.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I'm just a weird guy.
Same
or whatever.
Dude.
I think I'm a swell guy. But most people would describe it as weird. Because I went and played my buddy yesterday who I made all mad. I had to finish that tennis match, and he beat me. Really pissed me off. Actually, I don't care. He's a good guy. But he was basically apologetic. And he's like, man, you are so much better when you are angry, when you play tennis angry. I'm like, I don't think so. He's like, yeah, I was so angry yesterday. He goes, I'll give you this much credit, though. You're the same guy when you play tennis when you don't play tennis. And I go, I'm angry? Intense, he said. All right. Yeah, that was the thing back in the day. If you were trying to break into the radio business, they would put you on, you know, where nobody could hear you. Different approach in some places today. Do you know what I'm saying?
So I've heard.
You picking up what I'm putting down?
This one, yes.
Got it. It's hard to be among the greatest. It's hard in professional sports to get to the highest levels that you want to. By the way, I am pretty readily willing and able, and I often will criticize athletes who don't get to the highest levels of their sport, because that's the job, that's the deal. In fairness, very, 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 very few of us get to the highest levels of our professions. I am extraordinarily blessed and lucky to do what I do for a living. I'm not Jim Rome, right? And wherever you're listening, I hope that you run your company, but a lot of people don't. So I'm not even mad at Dak Prescott. I'm not saying he sucks at football. None of that. I'm just pointing out that the guy finished second in MVP voting this past season, that he is 73-41 in the regular season, that he is, like Kirk Cousins, certainly a gifted quarterback who has been paid like one. 100 and checks notes, $60 million over 4 years on this current deal that is going to end after this upcoming season. He signed it in 2021, around this time of year. And that the standard that the Dallas Cowboys are paying for, not the standard I'm conjuring out of thin air, is a Super Bowl. The guys who run, men and women who own NFL teams, are not spending generational wealth on a single athlete because they're really excited to go 9-8. That's not how that works. All of these owners and all of these GMs and all of these head coaches are trying to come up with the exact recipe to be champions. That is the singular goal. That is the singular mark of success in that sport. That's it. All these folks are rich, right? The question is just to what degree. Most of these folks have other operations that they're running, that they're doing there. They want to win championships. I promise you, no one is trying to go 4-13. That's not the goal. And that's the standard. And Dak Prescott has come woofully short in that respect. 2-5 in the postseason. You've watched the games. I have too. Underwhelming. Has not been particularly easy to watch. They have not reached the NFC Championship game in a very, 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 very long time. 1995 season. They won the Super Bowl, but remember, that happens after the new year, 1996. Look, Cousins is making with the Falcons now 4 years, $180 million, but the big number is $100 million guaranteed. Kirk Cousins coming off a serious injury in his mid-30s. That is a little older than that. That is stunning. Joe Burrow, who is young, is on a $275 million deal, $220 million guaranteed, younger than Dak, and I would say already more successful. He has already made a Super Bowl. More successful than Dak Prescott. I don't care about the regular season stats. Justin Herbert may be a pretty good comp, because Herbert's getting to a point where that's going to be a very similar thing in terms of, hey, you're great, but where is what we're actually paying you for? Signed a deal with the Chargers last offseason, 5 years, $262.5 million. But again, key number, $194 million guaranteed. Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, similar numbers, $185 million, $179 million guaranteed. Each 5 year deals in the $250 million, $260 million range. The point is, Dak Prescott in his next deal is going to want, $200 million guaranteed. And he's probably going to get $150 million to $190 million or somewhere in that range, maybe more because numbers go up. And the Cowboys have answered the most difficult question in sports by saying no. It's going to be a year. They can still sign him. But the news yesterday that they do not have a deal. I'll just read you the Ian Rappaport tweet. The Cowboys and Dak Prescott have a mutual understanding of his contract situation, sources say, with no offers from Dallas, despite him being in a contract year. Let me just pause there. In the deal that he signed, the extension I told you about, the four-year deal 3 years ago, there's a no-tag clause. There's a no-trade clause. And Pretty Daddy very earnestly, very excitedly explained to me for the breaks are 5 minutes long. Explained to me for 4 minutes and 40 seconds that a no-tag clause means you can't tag him. And a no-trade clause means you can't trade him. And I wish you could have heard it, because just to mess with him, I go, wait. Because I had to pause him. He was really excited. I go, wait. He has the no-tag clause. He goes, yeah, it's a no-tag clause. I go, they can't tag him? And then he was off and running again. He was really into it. This is true, right? This is a true story.
Sad but true.
I found it very, very, very amusing. And you're an excellent producer, because you want to make sure I get this stuff right. Thank you. That means that Dak Prescott will be an unrestricted free agent next year, this time next year, if he does not come to an agreement with the Cowboys. Now, will they come to an agreement? Maybe. But teams tend to lose their leverage, not gain it as the season goes along, because it looks desperate and because you're just the clock is ticking closer to Dak Prescott getting paid. The only risk here for Dak, and it's a real risk, is a significant, significant injury. But again, and no one's rooting for that, obviously, Kirk Cousins just came off an injury that ended his season at a much, much older age with a similar, I think, track record and a lack of success. And he got paid. He got paid a whole bunch of money. By the way, buying an Atlanta Falcons team that goes from projected 7.5 win total to 10, right? So that's good. But the Cowboys are much more of a contender in reality and in their own mind's eye than the Falcons. So if the Falcons are willing to do this, you'd think the Cowboys would be only when you're inside something, when you're in an organization, when you're up close and personal, when you see everything every day, you can make evaluations the rest of us can't if you're good at what you do. Now, big asterisk here, big, you know, maybe, but if, warning sign, the Cowboys are poorly run. And their ability to make assessments about anything, I would call into question. But, man, Mike McCarthy under a lot of pressure. Jerry Jones, I like Jerry, he is not a 50-year-old owner. He's an older gentleman who has talked about how much he would like to see another Super Bowl in his lifetime. It's hard to find quarterbacks. If they do not sign Dak Prescott to a deal in the coming, you know, season, if they don't come to an agreement, it's hard to know where they're going to go and who they're going to find. Already the Giants have been put out there, so maybe the Giants would be interested in Dak Prescott. It's a little early, but when Caleb Williams fails, it's a little joke because I'm a Bears fan, but, you know, they can look into that a little bit. Just kidding, kind of. I love the pink phone. Loving the pink phone hanging out here in L.A. I really do. It's got a great energy. The Cowboys are doing the right thing. They're just doing it way too late. And the thing that I find really interesting about this and perplexing is the Cowboys do not have a Jordan Love on their roster. Now, go back to when Jordan Love was a leverage point or a plan if Aaron Rodgers walked. Very few of us. And if, by the way, my friends in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, very few of you really believed he was going to be up to the task. He had not shown a lot of glimpses. It had been several years. The conventional wisdom was if he was good enough, we would have seen it by now. There just wasn't a lot of optimism. Now, we were all wrong. And the Packers, to their credit, like I just said, you can evaluate things internally in a way people from the outside cannot. They got it right, and that is to their credit. But they had a plan. They had a plan. There is no plan in Dallas. What, Trey Lance, who Pretty Daddy thought was going to be the next Tom Brady? Don't cough it away. Your mic's, yeah. That's the thing that's amazing to me about this. I don't think Dak Prescott is worth the money. I don't think he is going to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback in his lifetime. He's already played with some pretty talented players on that team. He's already played with a pretty good defense. He hasn't been able to have even a little bit of success. He has been brutal in the playoffs. And the Cowboys have been shockingly underwhelming. Now, I understand that he at 30, and he turns 31 this summer, that he's young by current quarterback standards, even if he's sort of middle-aged or old by the standards of 15 years ago. I'm not talking about age. I'm not talking about anything. I'm talking other than ability. It's a really bold move by the Cowboys. It is a, and by the way, it may just be incompetence. Like I'm crediting them with making the right decision. Who knows what they're actually thinking or doing? But the fact they don't have a plan, that they don't have a successor, that they're not in a position to point to someone internally that they can have confidence saying this is going to be the guy going forward. And maybe I'm wrong on Trey Lance, but I'm not. And you know that I'm not. We all know that I'm not. That is the thing that is extraordinarily disconcerting. Now, you could also, I suppose, presume that the Cowboys for the first time in a long time are going to be patient and get it right in trying to find a backup plan. Maybe, and I don't really believe this, but try to give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they have their eye on some quarterback later in this draft who they think they can get, maybe, and the Chiefs did this. So maybe there's a world where I'm just underplaying their willingness to be aggressive in the draft. The Chiefs went up to get Mahomes when nobody saw it coming. Maybe there's a world where that happens here too. But I think the Cowboys don't have a plan. They got part one right, no Dak. Part two, good luck. John Gonzalez, my guy, Beyond the Arc co-host, joins me next to XM Hoops. Bill Ryder, CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.